This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to Real News my University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication colleague, Professor Bish Sen. And one of the reasons, Bish, I wanted you to be participatory in this series is because of your background as a journalist in India, and then your work as an academic in North America, looking at globalization. So as we try to help ourselves as news consumers and help other news consumers differentiate what we would consider fact from misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, lies, how can you help us navigate the globalized media scene? If something is going on elsewhere and we want those primary source media outlets, are there tools you can suggest to stay away from that which might be misguiding us?
Well, first of all, thank you, Peter, for having me. I appreciate that. And yes, I mean, you know, I do have a background in journalism in India, and I do teach courses on, you know, global media and communication. And so I've been thinking about this much, as I'm sure you have been as well. So to begin with, I would say that, you know, one of the mantra words in journalism is sources, right? And when we think of global media or global communication, sources become notoriously slippery. I mean, you know, we all know the story about the guy who travels from the US, meets a guy in a five-star hotel and creates a story. And maybe that person is trustworthy, maybe not, but we never know. And it's always a little dubious. So I would say in terms of understanding the world, we need to be very careful that our sources are valid, not just in the term of being true, but also sort of being local and contextual and expressing the views of people who are experts on the ground.
And so how does one do that, especially if it's not a full-time job, but it's a news consumer who wants to know what's happening?
Yeah, and I will focus a little bit on India, because, you know, I can't really talk about, say, Africa or some other places with any degree of expertise. So I would say that fortunately, in some ways, the internet has been a great blessing. I mean, it's a curse, but it's also a blessing. I mean, the internet is a curse because if your sources are your Facebook feed or Twitter feed, you just do not know. But fortunately, I think, and I'll give you a little bit of history about the Indian journalism context to make sense of my argument. So, you know, when India became independent, before independence, obviously the press was kind of monitored by the British government, right? And when India became independent, the Indian state kind of copied the British government in saying, we will control radio. And then later they said, we will control television. So every bit of news that came out on radio or television was kind of like propaganda. I mean, not like Nazi propaganda, Stalinist, but gentle propaganda, you know. Surprisingly, the Indian press remained in private hands and very, very free, very, very adversarial, you know, extremely devoted to finding out all the dirt that the politicians were up to. Now, over the years, and this is an argument made by Robert McChesney about American journalism, which is that as newspaper companies became more and more corporate and just bottom line profit seeking, the quality of news, for example, you know, in the Iraq war just deteriorated, meaning they became, you know, basically looking at the profit line to create news. The same process, you know, because capitalism is kind of universal, happened in India too. And the press, which was actually what I would call gloriously free once upon a time when I was growing up, became more and more subservient to money, sensational news, and unfortunately now to the BJP government, which is, you know, just flexing its muscle, trampling on press freedom, locking up journalists, et cetera, et cetera.
So then what does the news consumer do who's sitting somewhere else in the world and something's going on in India and they want an understanding of it?
Yes.
How do they differentiate?
That's a great question. So I think if you went about in the traditional way, said, look, okay, I know the Times of India is a very respectable Indian paper. Well, you will get there, but you may get news which is very slanted towards the government. So I think, unfortunately, you need to do a little bit of research on your own to find out those organs of the press, which are mainly on the internet, because, you know, they can't survive in print form because you need ads, and then, you know, the government may step in. But there are several really independent voiced, whatever you want to call them, but, you know, a web thing is neither a magazine nor a newspaper because it changes every day like a newspaper, but it's kind of, you know, it's also static like a magazine. It stays, the same content stays there for a week, a month sometimes. And I can just off the top of my head give you some names, just an example, like Caravan, a magazine, Scroll, The Wire. You know, so there are about half a dozen to a dozen news magazines, let's call them, that are fiercely independent even today, continuously pointing out how the government is trying to throttle the news, spread misinformation, whether it's about COVID, whether it's about, you know, conflicts with Pakistan, et cetera, you know. And sometimes at even great cost to individual careers, and I won't say lives, I won't go as far, that fortunately hasn't happened in India. I mean, it's not like Russia where, you know, somebody pokes an umbrella into you and you're dead. But certainly, you know, harassment, suddenly, you know, coming in, raiding your office and looking at stuff. So there's a risk involved. So I would applaud these very, very courageous journalists.
And for the news consumer, the suggestion from you is to look at these, watch them over time, compare what they're saying to something you may know from another source, and
then embrace it
if you think that they can be trusted.
I think that would really be the responsible way. If you want the truth about a particular region, I don't think you can, A, depend on Western media, as we well know, because it tends to be superficial. I mean, look at the profound misunderstanding of Afghanistan. I mean, today I read a beautiful piece by an Indian journalist, and Indians know Afghanistan because it's next door. And he said, you know what? This thing that happened, you couldn't even hear a gun going off. There were no guns. So he said, this is not how Afghanis fight. In fact, they're the world's best fighters. But in Afghanistan, when they know they can't win, they just have a deal and money is exchanged. And that's what happened now. They just said, told the Taliban, okay, you know, you guys take over. And so silently, I mean, look at the pace at which the Taliban just galloped across. And what is it? How many billion dollars did the US spend and waste? And how many US lives were lost for this silly thing? Partly because it's a matter of not understanding that place through local sources, through local knowledge, but just imagining that, oh, I can just fly into Kabul and know what's happening.
And I think that really is the key and what our takeaway is from this conversation. And I very much appreciate it. Local knowledge, local sources, over time, proving themselves mm-hmm. to be accurate will help all of us understand across our immediate close borders.
Absolutely, because I think in this global world, we need knowledge of other places, but we better be sure that we have the right knowledge. I mean, that's what I would say.
Professor Bishsen, it is always a pleasure. And for this purpose, Real News, we appreciate your participation.
My pleasure, and thank you, Peter.